Today on Doomed!
A white nationalist has been working in the U.S. State Department for years while also leading the local Washington, D.C. chapter of a white nationalist group. On this episode of Doomed with Matt Binder, we have the full story from the very reporter who broke it. Michael Edison Hayden, senior investigative reporter with the Southern Poverty Law Center, will join us to break it all down. Whew, this is quite the story, ladies and gentlemen. But before we get into it, I gotta plug some things real quick. To support this show, check out patreon.com/mattbinder and become a patron. You can also support this show by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/mattbinder. The former is how you monetarily support the show. The latter is how you just support the show by clicking a button and subscribing to the YouTube channel. That's it. Pretty simple, right? All right. Now, without any other plugs, other than obviously go to the Southern Poverty Law Center's Hate Watch site and read these pieces immediately after this show is over. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so excited to be here, as usual. These are my favorite. Media appearances.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Now, I don't know if meeting me for the first time this past week has sort of given you those rose-tinted glasses or whatever it's whatever the saying is.
Because I am okay. Give money to his Patreon, I think.
Oh, why? Oh, maybe I should pull you up on the. I always forget to pull us up our video up on the YouTube right away. But now people can visually see us. And wow, what a
plug. We also need on YouTube, I think.
What was
just
that?
Just in general, we need more sane content on YouTube.
We definitely do. Yes, and I don't know if this is considered sane content, but I'll take it.
No, I don't think it's considered sane. Whenever I'm there, it's probably not. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, just some fun stuff to start out this incredible story. I met Michael for the first time along with Jared Holt of Right Wing Watch recently, and we all the Avengers of people who cover this crazy stuff.
Yeah,
not as catchy as I could have probably come up with if I thought about it, but on the spot we are the Avengers of people who cover this crazy stuff.
Yeah, Holt and I had a very eventful weekend.
Right.
Now,
before we get into the story again, this is going away from the personal stuff between us now, but getting into something that was interesting when I was first setting up this show for today. Now, I use a program called Restream to stream on YouTube, Periscope, Twitch, and Facebook simultaneously while we're doing this live stream. And for the first time ever, one of these platforms wouldn't let me use the title that I wanted to use. And it was Twitch. Twitch said I could not use my title. Now, the title of this episode, for the live stream at least, is A White Nationalist in the State Department. And they said I couldn't call it that. However, when I took out the word nationalist and swapped it for the word supremacist, Twitch was A-okay with that. So apparently they've smartly banned use of the word nationalist, but someone dropped the ball and didn't think of the word supremacist.
Well, how many white nationalists use the title white nationalist to describe themselves, right?
A lot more than right.
So it's like, so the people they're punishing theoretically are people like you who are, you know, covering this stuff on your program.
Right. A lot more of us use that term than them. They would be like, what? If they even wanted to,
they'll say they're white nationalists when they think nobody's listening. I mean, they'll use those terms. They'll use, you know,
right. Maybe they think they've got the mask on when they say something like, I don't know, there's white genocide, or it's okay to be white, or not even anymore. Really, that's pretty much giving up the ghost now, right?
We've caught up to everything after Charlottesville. You know, what's amusing to me is like the Many of the people that are involved in The Right Stuff, which is Mike Penovich's website and his organization, which our State Department guy was part of, they were like white guys who were really into Wu-Tang Clan in high school. So I'm 40. Penovich is 43. And these guys are – sorry, I'm going to turn this off. These guys are like Matt Gebert, the State Department guy, is 38. So we're all kind of like in the same generation. It was interesting. And I was thinking of like, you know, what Wu-Tang Clan song I would like to share with him if I could. And I was thinking of like Can It Be That It Was All So Simple, if you remember that song from the first Wu-Tang album. Because it's really – before Charlottesville – these guys had a much different time, a much different outlook. They really thought they were winning, you know?
Right.
And now everybody's caught up to them. And it's a question of how serious are you? How much did you really mean it? Because if you really meant it, you're going to get it from law enforcement and from everything else now, because it's no joke anymore for our people.
Right. No, that's, you know, I'm trying to think what possible terminology they use now to sort of hide it. And it's almost
they don't
anymore, really. Look at right.
Stephon Molyneux, right?
What was
Look at Stephon Molyneux, right?
Right. Well, I don't know what he's gone through. Something
he's just basically holding on to a few, his verified check mark and things like that, but he's knocking at the door right now. I mean, that's what the stuff he's saying.
Right. I mean, I've been following him for a very long time. Like, I discovered him when I was covering, you know, the men's rights movement for the Sam Cedar's Majority Report back in, like, 2012, 2013. And he, you know, he clearly believed the white supremacist stuff then. But he's not even, like, trying to even, like...
Stephon kind of looks like...
hide it now.
Yeah, Stephon looks like a kind of like a he looks like a Spider-Man villain from like the 80s or the black costume era. The name would be like Dr. Poison or something like that.
Right. That's
like he really does like look like which is you know, it's amusing that so many people are just like down with the guy. On a personal level, it gives me the creeps.
Well, the weird thing about him though is okay, let me put this as an addendum before I bring this up.
Yeah.
A lot of white supremacist, how they bring people into white supremacy. A lot of their sort of membership growing tactics involve brainwashing people. You know, people who may not have been white supremacist thinking beforehand and then fell into this. But Stephon Molyneux is a rare one who literally had his own cult of followers who weren't, you know, part of the cult of white supremacy. They were part of the cult of Molyneux.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like I said, I mean, with many of these guys, I was trying to figure out okay, well, where are they getting an audience from? Who are they, you know, getting the audience from? I'm an investigative reporter. I'm not a performer or anything like that. So, you know, I'm just kind of like, you know, who are the performers that I listen to and who I like and what's going on. And with most people, I can sort of figure it out, you know, like Sam Hyde, who has like a big following on the far right and among white nationalists. Like, I get it. Like, because, you know, he's got talent and, you know, I understand like certain things that he's kind of like undercutting, liberal hypocrisy and things like that. I get it. Some of these guys are having.
Uh-oh, Michael, you froze. 1 second here. We'll pull you back up. Let's see. I'm gonna have to call you back. All right, I'm going to hang up on you. No big deal, folks. All right, you froze.
I froze.
A large portion.
Okay. Right,
so let's try this again with take it from, I guess, Sam Hyde.
Well, I was saying it's like I'm trying to with many of these guys, I try to understand like how did they get an audience to begin with? Like what is it other than racist or whatever? And I just brought up Hyde as an example of a guy who's like, you know, has talent, and picks his subject matters in a particular way. And I can understand why, you know, a particular age group responds to that, you know, critique of liberal hypocrisy and things like that.
Right,
but it was, I just don't like it. There's no warmth And like I said, he looks like a 1980s Spider-Man villain, like a kind of one-off.
Right.
And it's not, it's just hard to imagine just being like every day being like, yeah, I want to like hear this guy again, like say nasty things about women, whatever else. It just seems odd to me.
Right, right. Yeah, he's, I mean, there's stories of people who haven't spoken to their families, cut off their family from, like, completely have cut themselves off from their family because Stephane Molyneux. Yeah. I get this happens with the broader movement of white supremacy. I'm sure just even in the broader conservative movement, there's obviously stories of, people's parents and grandparents getting brainwashed by Fox News. I know this happens, but it's just an extra layer of bizarre that there are people who have specifically done this to join the cult of specifically Stephane Molyneux. Right. But I guess we could do a whole show on Molyneux, right?
Cult stuff comes into this particular story as well, so it's a good warm-up having.
Right, so before we get into this, though, I just want to give this one comment, though, about Sam Hyde. You know, Mr. Prison Planet is infamous for saying that conservatives are getting better at comedy now, and it's scaring the left. I guess Sam Hyde would be the closest to conservatives getting better at comedy now.
Yeah, I mean, like, Hyde is all, like, I would say, like, I just want to clarify something. Like, a good portion of Hyde's, like, shtick is not only intolerable based upon what he's saying, but also just stupid. Like, right. I mean, just, you know, I mean, he's just, like, really, stupid, coarse, repetitive, you know, lacking in imagination, because there's no, you know, because he starts inherently with like limits around what he believes, what he thinks, and stuff like that. So it makes him, like, as a comedian, he can, you know, he has trouble growing.
Right.
So you got to kind of like stay on the irony tip in order to survive.
And I don't even know if calling him a conservative comedian is accurate. He's more like just, I don't know, like a shit poster come offline, right?
Yeah,
I
mean. Exactly. Yeah, it's comes from shit posting culture.
Continue. Yeah.
No, I was just gonna say the homophobic stuff is like, I just find really cringe and disgusting. Right. Anyway.
So let's jump into this huge story you've got.
Yeah.
At this point, I guess it's not too shocking in general to learn that there are people, you know, working for the government, especially with the Trump administration, who have sympathetic beliefs to white nationalism or are straight out white nationalists themselves. But this story is, you know, it takes us back even before the Trump era to really, you know, to people who just basically woke up to the fact that there are still white supremacists among us when Donald Trump became president of the United States. To those people, this will be another wake-up call to just that, you know, this has even existed in our government before Donald Trump came to power. So let's jump into this huge report you've got at Hate Watch. Let's start with, I mean, you pick how you want to start. I mean, I guess we just tell us how you fell into this, I guess, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, I have been building intelligence for a while on The Right Stuff, which is Mike Penavich's podcast network. But it's also, I mean, you know, the podcast network also serves as an entryway for a lot of people into like an on the ground movement that he's trying to build. And if you go on our hate map, you'll see that they have chapters, which they call pool parties, all across the country. I have been focusing in 2019 on, providing people with the names of a lot of the lieutenants in Panovich's organization. So there was Spectre. I did a story about him. He was the guy who created, like, you know, he didn't create, but he certainly amplified the Day of the Brick thing where it's attacking journalists or whatever. And, and then we also did a story about Joseph Jordan, who is of Flushing, who goes by the moniker
Flushing Queens, just to make sure everyone knows exactly where we're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, it's a place that I care about very much. And, as a Mets fan, it's just very disappointing.
Home of City Field, right? The Mets.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like one of the more pathetically earnest of these guys. And so, you know, in building that intelligence, you know, over time, you know, that goes back to before I came to SPLC, I have a lot of clues about the identity of a lot of people who are currently pseudonymous or go by fake names and stuff like that, right? And one of the guys on my radar was this guy, Coach Finstock. And, you know, it was, you would see Finstock in the Right Stuff forum. He is, you know, we have, I preserved parts of that forum, you know, SPLC preserved parts of this forum that was taken down in May of 2018 because they're afraid identities were being exposed by it, which now they are, just to say. You know, Finstock was doing the recording for the DC and Virginia chapter of the Right Stuff, which is called DC Helicopter Pilots. And you would see him on Twitter and stuff like that. So he used an avatar of the Tom Hardy character from Mad Max Fury Road. And he used the Viggo Mortensen, character from Eastern Promises about the Russian mob. There's a great part in that movie where he goes like rob him to kill somebody, whatever. And he used to use the avatar where it's just like a screenshot of him doing this. And it would go by different handles. And one of the handles was like at Never Cuck, which I thought was one of the better alt-right handles. It's like, for what they want to do, got the point across. The point is that, you know, had strands, had threads about this that we could find in archives and stuff like that. But it started with a tip that I received. And then because I have sources who, you know, are close to Penevich and know things about the organization, you know, it was easy enough from there to find other people to validate certain things. Then through open source intelligence work, I was able to take an early handle that he used. I just want to say credit an anonymous person who also flagged this to my attention. So it's not, you know, I don't want to be like take full credit for it. But the, you know, you go back through the handle and you can see different names that this person used. And the earliest, you know, the earliest ones use some form of his actual name. And the name is Matthew Q. Gebert. And Matthew Q. Gebert is a throwback, you know, to a story that Alex Koch did for Sludge. You know Alex Koch?
Right, right.
All the Money Report.
He reports on basically, you know, he covers, you know, a lot of financial corruption and connections with different organizations that financially, you know, that fund different movements or politicians or, you know, corporations that donate to certain groups or politicians. Right.
I'm a big Koch fan, and like I would, you know, I really want to work with him on stories like this, you know, in the future if it could be done.
Not to be confused with the Kochs.
Yes. It's like the opposite of that. If you know, you talk to Alex and you hear his politics and stuff. Anyway, the point is that that he was able to uncover just, you know, people who, government employees who had given donations to Paul Nehlen during his second run for office. We talked about Paul Nehlen when, like, last time I was on the show, right?
Right.
So Paul Nehlen is the congressman for, well, the congressman. Whoa, hey.
Luckily, you know, we dodged that bullet.
Yeah. So he ran for Congress twice under the Republican ticket and started as kind of like an America First kind of guy. But by the second time that he rolled around, he basically had OD'd on red pills and was talking about the Jewish question and all kinds of other loony stuff.
Right. The thing that really made it obvious to everyone that, hey, this guy is not just your generic mainstream conservative floating around, floating, you know, tossing the stuff around and not really full on board. He's the thing that made people realize he wasn't that was when he put out the list of Jewish people in the media. What was that?
I was on the list. I was on Newsweek.
You were on the list. Yeah,
I was on the list of Jews in the media that attacked him or whatever.
And you're not Jewish.
I'm not. No. Mm. But I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't care. I'm happy to be Jewish. I consider myself an honorary, Jew. I went to all boys Catholic school in Long Island, but like, you know, I mean, you know, I'm a New Yorker first and foremost. A lot of my friends are Jewish, so I'm happy to be Jewish. However, I was on that list, and it was not accurate.
Right. Anyway, boy. Someone's got to update their Judar, I guess.
My cat is like waiting out right now.
Oh, you know, yeah. I had cat problems before we came on, and basically he's chilling on his little towel that he lays on in the bathroom right now.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing, but like, I'm gonna have to yell at my cat in a little bit. Anyway, the point is that Gebert was, you know, gave money to Paul Nehlen during his second campaign, like when he was kind of in sensation on Twitter for going too far, and this was after he was. You know, after Richard Spencer, of all people, said that he had gone too far. And you know, that matters because it shows what kind of person Gebert is and what Gebert really believes, that it's a stage beyond what Richard Spencer believes. So Gebert is a foreign affairs officer in the U.S. State Department. And in tracing his whole history, as you can see through the, you know, investigation, which is really long, he said himself that he was radicalized in 2015.
I want to really pause there, because I want to drive that home. Here's a guy who realized and came out, at least to himself and other people who believe in the same ideology. He came out as a white nationalist working for the State Department in 2015. You know, Obama's still president.
That's right.
We are not even in the election year yet. So I just want people to – Trump hasn't even announced at this point, I'm assuming.
No. I mean, like, the thing is, this has, like, less to do with Trump and more to do with internet radicalization and how – what it's actually doing. It's, you know, the degree to which it's frying people's brains, basically. Right. So Gebert – come on. I'm a cat. Is right here in the middle of this? Well, anyway, sorry. I happen to be near the litter box, and like, I don't know what he's up to.
He's showing white supremacy what he thinks of it. There you go.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. So basically, it's unbelievable. He's like running now. Okay, right. So Gebert was, I can't stress this enough, like an extremely promising and gifted mind. He was in his high school. I mean, you're going to see a story coming out tomorrow. I'm going to do another follow-up on this. He was, you know, most likely to succeed in his yearbook from his New Jersey high school. He was, you know, in a study abroad in Moscow and had done kind of a study abroad in high school in the Ukraine.
I wonder, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I wonder if that had, did you see any connections between if that had anything to do with his radicalization? Like, did he come across anything in Ukraine? Now, if there's any Ukrainian people listening, and nothing against you, but there is clearly a far right movement espousing this stuff in the Ukraine. And it again goes back even before it was, you know, mainstream in Ukraine before it was mainstream here in modern day.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, what I would say is, you know, my first thing is whether I saw a connection or not is no comment, is what I would say. What I would say if I were investigating the situation, I have limits. You know, I don't have the national security contacts. I'm a reporter who focuses on far right extremism, and though that's where my contacts are, that's where my particular set of skills lies. If I were in the State Department investigating him, and I were in the government, I was investigating him, I would probably be looking, if I could, at some of the some of the connections he may have had in Eastern Europe. His wife is, you know, comes from a Serbian family. You know, he's been back and forth, you know, from Russia and Ukraine a few times, according to friends who spoke to me. There'll be a little bit of that in the reporting tomorrow. I don't know. I can only present what I do know. I don't have the context to go and try to figure out what he did. And, you know, I have no idea. I don't know what he did with his, I don't know what he did with his security clearance. That's, I have no idea what he did, but you know, I would be interested to know. And I think that there are some people who will be interested to know that are not, you know, have a better way of looking at this than I do.
Right.
So he comes in and, you know, he goes into George Washington University's program for Elliott School of International Affairs, and he receives a presidential management fellowship. And that is like a, you know, from what I understand, extremely prestigious, and it's really about grooming young people for leadership positions. So this guy's shown tremendous promise throughout his entire life. And he gets into the State Department in 2013, and I've seen photographs with him and a group of photographs with him and a group with like John Kerry and stuff like that. And it's just a trip to see. And he, according to him, you know, says that whatever his radicalization, now you could look at his views from before then and see, and friends have said that he showed signs of kind of turning more and more kind of this anti-immigrant way of seeing and things like that. But he says that he really becomes white nationalist in 2015, according to him. And you start to use on his Twitter account, stuff like that, the bio description, radicalized by reality. And he uses it. Yeah. I mean, you know, idiotic in my opinion. And he, you know, continues to do his job at the State Department while operating these Twitter accounts and periodically appearing on podcasts.
Do we know if these podcasts, like Pinovich's podcast, did these alt-right names radicalize him, or was he already radicalized at this point and he was just joining them to spread their ideology? Like, do we know exactly, other than obviously what we just spoke about, things where we don't know yet about Ukraine and stuff, but in terms of just the online internet stuff, do we know if these podcasts were already a part of it, or they came later when he was already fully into it?
Well, charlatans tend to find one another, and people who, you know, practice in, you know, selling bullshit tend to find one another very easily, it seems like.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that, and then there's a little bit, you know, I mean, some people are resistant to it. I mean, it's like, why have I've listened to more white nationalist podcasts than most white nationalists, and, you know, I'm pretty resistant to it, the propaganda, right? So it's not like Hayden, you know,
you're galaxy brain white nationalist. You're.
I was like, Mike, I'm not even fully white. And he was like, no, you can be white. You know, it's fine. You know, he used to talk to me on the phone before he sent me a cease and desist.
Right. Who said this to you?
Penovich.
Right. As long as you're not Jewish. Oh wait, with him, I guess it doesn't matter either, right?
you could join. He's just like looking for. Just probably just like looking for me to lay off, probably. But it's difficult to say, like, whether it's like, you know, the podcast take him to another level or, you know, how did he wind up, you know, going further and further? I don't know. I can't speculate. I can only say what he said. He said Ricky Vaughn. You remember Ricky Vaughn on Twitter?
Ricky Vaughn, right. But he came later, right? He wasn't around. I mean, even if he was around in 2015, no way he had the power then.
Ricky Vaughn was really big in 2015.
Really? I'm trying to remember.
He was really big in 2015. Man.
Right.
And Twitter was really laissez-faire. He was sharing Daily Stormer links and stuff like that. This is like, it's amazing to imagine. Sometimes I wish, like, you know, I've done the reporting on Ironmarks that we've talked about here, where I've got a frozen. I wish I could have a frozen version. I just like pick a date in 2015. And just crawl through Twitter, just like frozen in time, and just go through the corridors of what was there when it wasn't, things weren't suspended, and just to see, you know, what everything was and just look at it, because it was a totally different website then. Right. And yeah, that dude, you know, I didn't care about Twitter at all at that point. I was like reporting out of India. Like I didn't give a shit like all about it.
I remember I was, 2015 was peak Twitter for me, but I don't, what Twitter really needs to do. And, you know, Michael Tracy got a lot of shit for saying this on Twitter because he worded himself wrong, but I sort of understood what he meant. He was upset when Twitter took down one of the shooter's accounts last weekend. I don't remember if it was the El Paso shooter or the Dayton shooter.
It was the Dayton shooter.
Right. It was the Dayton one. And listen, he got shit for how he worded it. I totally get it. He worded it completely wrong. But what he was saying was, you know, this stuff is up and we could get information out of there that reporters could use to really understand what was going on. And I say this, you know, when not just about shooters, but any account that gets taken down from Twitter, Twitter in full, you know, they have their whole transparency report, and social, everyone from Facebook to YouTube to all these social media companies are trying to be more transparent to really be fully transparent. They should offer up these archived accounts that have been taken down to reporters to be able to use for stories, for studies, they would never do it.
I've been reaching out to comment to this company for a long time. I mean, I've been doing it since the Newsweek day. I mean, they are just like, all they are trying to do is cover their ass about what they're doing.
Right. But they do. Facebook to give them.
Their website is just basically a radicalization engine that is Blue Gab. That, like, I mean, come on, dude. Like, we already know, we know the deal.
Well,
and
Reddit,
Twitter makes a big deal about Facebook and YouTube. I will go head to head and just say that, like, you know, Becca Lewis's research is really great on YouTube and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if I would say it's worse, but like, dude, Twitter is so bad. It's like, where a lot of these people find their, you know, find their legs as like extremists and stuff like that. And
well, I'm not saying this thinking they're going to do it. I'm saying, you know, in a perfect world, you know,
Gab, which is supposedly for free speech, right? They took down Robert Bauer's like profile immediately following the Tree of Life terror attack,
right?
You know, which he was alleged. He was the alleged terrorist there. And they just like took it down. They just, oh, this didn't happen. We don't have Nazis on our website that is, like whatever percentage Nazi, I think probably 50%. I don't know. Who knows?
I will say this, though, about one of the networks I did not previously mention, but Reddit. When they uncovered, you know, Reddit gets a lot of shit and they deserve it for a lot of the shit that they've contributed to this whole problem. But when they found the foreign interference, excuse me, from Russian accounts, Iranian accounts, whatever, they archived that stuff and they kept it up like in perpetuity, just like to view, like you can't comment on it, you can't do anything with it, but it's visible if you want to go find it, to dig into it and find out what the accounts were posting, where they were posting it, like what subreddits they were posting it in, any sort of comments. They left that up for people to see what they found, which, you know, I give them credit for doing, because that's something that's incredibly helpful.
Dude, I am all for preserving bad content online. I mean, it helps me as an investigator. These guys leave a trail, and so thank you very much for what you've done. So it's like, I just say to all the amateur sleuths out there and the people who casually do this, archive everything you see that you think is bad, because in one day I'll be using it in an investigation. That's the truth, though. It really is.
I screenshot everything. It's become second nature to me. I see something online, I don't even think on
those websites, because like I said, it really helps. You know, people were archiving things about of these Coach Finstock posts and things like that. And that was a big part of my investigation. It's able, I'm able to cobble together what I could. If I could see every day what he was doing, I think it might even be more apparent faster to me than he was who he said he was, and that the sources were accurate. But we proved that out sufficiently in the story. Now we have a photograph of him. And tomorrow, I should say, we will have a report that someone in his family goes on the record, I will say, and reported him to the FBI several months ago. This is no joke.
Is this the first time you've mentioned this anywhere?
I think so.
We got breaking news on Doomed, folks. This is, thank you, Michael. This is incredible, and everyone needs to go to Hate Watch tomorrow when it's published.
I'll post it on Twitter probably before it even gets on like onto our website, I bet. I'll be there, but it's like our website is like people find stuff, I think, from social. Right?
Are we talking, I don't know if you could tell us yet, are we talking extended family or are we talking like family?
Oh, family, dude.
Wow.
This is like a, you know, I don't know, you're going to find out. Anyway, the point is that, it's like, you know, the stuff is like, I mean, it brings up an interesting point. We're going on all kinds of tangents, and I'm sure, like, just in case somebody was looking for a train of thought from a while ago, I'm sorry. Hopefully we'll get back to it. But, like, you know, I mean, this stuff is tearing apart people's families. It's just really destroying families all over the place. And Penovich should know that. I mean, you know, his marriage fell apart after he was, you know, outed. He was, you know, going by Mike Enoch for a while. And it's like, you know, for what? You know, what are you fighting for exactly?
To get us back,
you're gonna make a white ethno state in the United States? But come on. You think people are gonna just sit there and be like, "Oh yeah, go ahead and do that. I'm not gonna create any trouble for you." It's like, come on, use your brain.
That's a great point. And to get us back on track,
families are getting totally destroyed by this.
Oh, for sure. Not just the people we talk about. There are families getting destroyed of just, you know, rank and file white supremacists, if you could even call them that. Just like, you know, people you'll never learn about because they're just unimportant people following along the ideology and believing this shit. Now, to get us back onto this specific guy, using something you mentioned here, the problem that with Penovich is he needed to find himself a woman like our friend over in the U.S. State Department found.
Good. This is good.
tell us, how do we say his last name again? I look at the name and it's
Gebert. I was calling him Gebert for the longest time until I was corrected by his family.
So it's Gebert. Okay, got it. So Gebert. So Gebert's wife actually is a major, major part of this all. Now she's not someone who is, you know, she's not someone who will feel bad bringing up because she's not actively involved. No, she is. She is on board, and she also takes – she's got her own – well, he's what? He's Coach Finstock. That's what he was mostly known as, right? Yeah. She's got her own – go ahead.
Wolfie James was what she was going by. So basically, Wolfie James was doing some – God, it's really sad, and they're difficult to read. I had a friend who's a playwright, very talented playwright, who looked at clicked on the links of the archives of her posts. She was doing like mommy blogging and blogging for women on the alt-right on Penovich's site. It's just like, until I guess they took it down, it exists in archives. And like, you know, he's just like, you know, I can't believe it's not a parody is what he said. I just can't believe this is like sincere and they're really doing this. But she did like a thing that was like 7 reasons why alt-right men are the hottest. Which is brutal, painful to see. Just the cringe level was just off the charts.
I would like to say that would be cringe for if it was like even like the hottest members in the DSA or something like that. It would just be like, please don't do that.
Real cringe shit. But it's even more cringe because it's like you know. Like taking the DSA example, it as a way of promoting the DSA that way, it would be like, oh,
right,
oh. Yeah, it's just like rough, just very difficult. And then there was like, how to red pill your woman.
Jeez.
Yeah. And then the number one weirdest like post of hers was she ranked PBS kids shows on a hate score.
Oh my God, I need to know. I need to know that list.
Most impacted by Jewish influence. So it was like the most okay was like Thomas the Train, which is like
makes sense.
We're both parents and like That's like, or you're like, oh yeah, the island of Sodor. That's like a, I guess it could function as an ethnostate. So that's okay. And then it goes down and like in the middle is like Curious George. And then the worst one was Sesame Street. And yeah, that's why Sesame Street, you know, gotta support it. It's good. Because it's pissing off white nationalists. But yeah, it was really funny.
It's too bad Dora the Explorer is a Nickelodeon show, right? I mean, otherwise.
It's like, you know, it's like these people, you just want to go and you'd be like, do you really want to call the television or YouTube? I don't know what she's referring to. Do you really want to call it YouTube? Like, you want to take the chance under a pseudonym or anything? Do you really want to do that? Because beyond the fact that it discredits you from almost any employment and you just look like a complete fool, it's also just stays with you for life. It's just being this like absolutely insane, cringe thing that you've done. Why do you want to do this? As well as all these people, it's like, dude, like, why do you want to do this stuff, man? What are you doing? What are you trying to achieve?
Right.
Like, it's like, really. But I mean, look, that's part of my brain. The other part of my brain is like, they're white nationalists and this is what they do. Yeah.
I got an issue. Okay, do they have kids?
Yeah, they do have kids.
Oh,
We reported we reported in the second story that had his photograph that like so Unicorn Riot, Media Collective, they went through Discord links until they could find where Coach Finstock was in the lead up to Charlottesville, and he posted cookies, swastika shaped cookies. And I had a source tell me, yeah, they served those in the house and there were kids present in the house. Served it. And yeah, I mean, it's really depressing. He like on one of the podcasts, he was talking about how he was, you know, one of the reasons he's having children was to fight against like white, declining white rights. And it's like, you know, just imagine being a child and like finding that out later. I would feel really just, I don't know. It's just a really sad, the children's stuff. It makes it really sad for me. And I'm like, I hope, they leave this stuff and are able to, you know, change their lives. And I don't know, you know, for the kids' sake, I don't know what I hope. Man, it's like it's such a awful story, but that's sort of what I was saying before.
Let's get into this. Oh, I'm sorry. Continue what you were saying. I don't want to cut you off.
No, it's just like, I mean, that's just another example of just like lives being destroyed by this bullshit.
Right.
I mean, you know, the more I see it, like, the more I'm irritated on just the most basic human level. Like, not even like I'm like angry. It's like we got to do something about white nationalists. Like, just angry at this bullshit, man. This brain poison that you guys are, you know, chucking around.
Right.
Anyway, continue.
So let me, you know, I think people listening to this might assume so far that we're talking about someone who is basically just, you know, active online because we're bringing up screen names and things like that. But yeah, your report goes extensively into the very real life actions and meetings and organizing that this guy has done. Now, let's get a little bit into that. These sort of events, sure, and parties and get-togethers and gatherings.
Sure. I have multiple sources spend time in his house. And according to sources, you know, white nationalists, some of which you would know from online and some of which you would not, would attend these gatherings. To my understanding, based upon what my sources told me, these would happen on holidays. One of the sources who spoke to me attended a get together with Penevich and some members of the right stuff on March 17th, 2017, which is St. Patrick's Day. And you know, at that gathering, there are a number of people. There's a guy who goes by Halberstram and podcasts for a show called Fascination. So I have some information about this fellow. and you know, a few other people that are in the movement. And you know, he was posting them on a semi-regular basis, according to sources. He was recruiting inside Panovich's forum for real life meetups based upon my reading of those posts. You know, just sort of you have this conversation here, and then we'll take this conversation offline for a vetting process. You know, apparently he was vetting people and having other people from the movement vet people. So he was extremely committed to the to use his own phrase, he uses internet speak in language to show you how absolutely polluted his mind is on this internet speak. But he was just like, you know, watching this IRL and all. It's like, imagine just like constantly talking in internet talk.
Right.
And you listen to the podcast. It's just sort of like, come on, man, you're like, you need to be rehabilitated and get offline for a little bit, man.
That's actually something that's. It's like a pattern with a lot of these guys, actually. They're that far gone in terms of just like basic human interaction that they start using internet speak in real life. And, you know, not ironically or to be silly when they're with buddies. Like, we're talking like legitimately using the language they use online because they just don't. There's something not right. There's something missing.
One of the most fatuous trends, like in like white nationalist propaganda recently, is this whole eco-fascism thing where they're like, oh, we're like, you know, we're going to be in nature and we're going to be like, we're going back to nature and we're doing all this stuff. And they put trees in their friggin', you know, like tree emojis in their avatar. And it's like, dude, if you were really doing that, you wouldn't be on Twitter telling me about it. It's like absolutely fatuous and laughable, like just clown stuff. Right. There's a guy like who goes by the name Borzoi. I have a little bit on him too. But this guy like basically is the, like, you know, he's, you know, does like Aaron's, like, you know, kind of for podcasts and things like that is the way I would describe it. And he's like all about, you know, collapse and all these different things. And it's, most of it is just memes and bullshit. I mean, that they have in their brains. And it's like this basic thing. It's like, if I want to go hiking, I go hiking. Like, you know, if I don't want to be on Twitter, you don't see me for like 13 days because like, I don't want to be on the website, like taking in the brain poison. Like, there's left-wing brain poison too, dude. Like, there's all kinds of garbage in this, like, you know, in these things. I mean, there are like capitalist, you know, entities that are like selling you a product and like they want you hooked. They want the algorithms hooked and all this crap. And yeah, tangent, frying people's brains. Anyway, point is, when you hear Gebert speak, he speaks about, you know, he uses internet speak and it's just like his spoken language. And he would talk about, I'm doing this IRL and I'm doing that, you know. In his podcast.
Now, did he attend Charlottesville? I know you mentioned how Unicorn Riot. They had found Discord chats relating to it.
Right.
But did he attend it? Or
yeah, according to him, he did. You know, I mean, he was, you know, he was on an episode of the Fatherland podcast, is one of you know, the TRS, you know, the Right Stuff podcasts, and. He was talking about, oh, I got out and I didn't get doxxed, which is like really brilliant move to go and then tell people about it in a recording, in a public recording.
Right. Smart guy. So
He's a smart guy. He's just stupid.
So let's bring this up now. So I should have brought it up earlier, but I'm just so fascinated with this all that I'm just.
Yeah. No, we're all over the place here. Read the story and then get, let this be the director's commentary.
Right. Exactly. No, I think that's a perfect.
I think
perfect.
Because it's just, the story is very long and it's dense and there are two of them and there's going to be a third one. So.
Right. I think that's a perfect way to describe it.
Yes.
So what exactly was he doing in the U.S. State Department?
Okay, so I am not an expert in the State Department, but all I know is that he was a foreign affairs officer with the Energy Resources Bureau. Now, I like what they do, I don't know 100%. I do know that he had security clearance, according to reports that I've read from people who do report on the State Department.
Which means there was background checks on this guy.
Yes. And, you know, had he been more effective at hiding his power levels, as they call it, who knows what this guy could have been, based upon what I'm hearing from other people, that he really could have risen to a very high-ranking position in the U.S. government.
Wow.
You know, he's the type of person who future Republican administrations could really be very close to the button, so to speak. He did talk about nuclear weapons as well. He was talking about, like, we need to have a country with nukes.
Nice. Do we know how, maybe not his exact salary, but do we know how much someone in his position of government makes?
Well, he's making, you know, according to what I've read, he's making, you know, upwards of 90,000, between 90,000 and 110,000 or whatever. He, you know, I think that's my estimate. That's my, you know, best guess from what I've read. And yeah, and he has like a house in Leesburg that is, you know, cost that he purchased for $500,000, which is, you know, I mean, this is not like, you know, they love to say like, oh, you're going after like working class, like schlubs who just, you know, into white nationalists say this and whatever. But like, this guy was not that by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I've been to his house and it's like, you know, I mean, it's a pretty, the guy was doing all right by himself, which is also scary because you kind of just see up close that how close he was to really getting away with something that I think a lot of Americans would consider to be treasonous.
Right. What is his current situation with the State Department since your report has come out?
Yeah, so he's been suspended according to other people's reports. I'll be able to report tomorrow that he is under investigation according to a State Department official. So that'll also be out. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, like they're for them to, you know, to take action, you know, I'd imagine without knowing, you know, everything that's going on. I do know that, CNN also reported that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was briefed by the State Department. Mm-hmm. So this is serious stuff. Yeah. And I would imagine, I'll just use those words, that law enforcement agencies beyond the State Department are looking into this guy because of what he did. And I would be very curious to know what they're finding in terms of what he did while he was there. You know, there's no question in anyone's mind, I'm sure, that he is exactly who we say he is. And I'm sure also that he is listening to his lawyers and he is, you know, just sitting back and trying to hold on to this job because I'm not sure what he is going to do. It's not clear to me what he can do otherwise. His wife was on Visit Loudoun's website as like a chair for like the tourism thing for Loudoun County, Virginia. So like Virginia wine country and stuff like that. Right. And so as of August 7th, she was listed on the website. And then after the story, they removed her. I reached out to them for a comment. They didn't respond to me, but it's very clear that on the archive, there's her name. Now she's gone. There'll be other stuff as well that I'm going to be able to report tomorrow. You can see, you just hang on for that. I mean, the wheels are in motion, I think, for this to be a very stressful time, for him. And, you know, I think presumably, some of the people that he was involved in, you know, in his white nationalist organization, because this is now, it's after El Paso, and this is not a game anymore. This is not a joke. You can tell that Penavich, for instance, is under a tremendous amount of stress. Like, there's no question in my mind, having heard his podcasts up until, like, Charlottesville, and, you know, his most effective thing was to take these really insidious and demented conspiracy theories about Jews and things like that, and present them in a way that would seem to people, you know, like a morning talk show or something like that, like kind of like Opie and Anthony or something like that. I don't really listen to that stuff. I was like, I used to listen to Howard Stern when I was in high school. But like that kind of morning show, you know, vibe where it's sort of like, right. you know, yeah, we're just breaking down the news. You know, no big deal. Just that and some Zog conspiracies. And yeah, that's what we're doing or whatever, you know, his tone.
As a side note, Howard Stern, much more talented than Opie and Anthony ever could be. So you were listening to the right show.
Okay. So basically, he would do like, you know, his tone after reporting and things like that have, you know, has become far less jovial, and it just it's more it's harshened is the way I would say it. And I would imagine he's under tremendous pressure. Andrew Anglin of Daily Stormer has speculated publicly, and without being able to say things that, you know, I might know about these situations, stuff like that, the FBI has been, you know, knocking on doors related to involving Panovich. And if that is true, there's, you know, there are people in the white nationalist movement who suspect that names are being given up and things like that, and, you know, that it's not safe to organize in real life. So I would just say that, like, you know, I would expect there has been pressure on Gebert after this, you know, after the story, and I would expect there would be pressure, and there more pressure on Panovich and his organization, and just across the board, because, like, if you think about it, like, about Trump and people like that, it's like, you know, Trump wants to be reelected really badly, and I think that it's very clear that white nationalism, the rise of white nationalism, has become a cudgel, you know, for the Democrats. I mean, it's very effective. You can see Trump in real time taking on water. I mean, it's not at the level of like a recession would be. Recession, he's like, I think he's just toast. And then
We might be headed that way. We'll see.
I think you could run my cat wherever he is against Trump in a recession, and the cat would run up the score on him.
To be fair, I think your cat would actually beat a number of the Democrats in the primary as well. But we'll.
That is also true. But yeah, like, you know, even in an okay economy, theoretically, Trump is taking on water with this white nationalism stuff. People are sick of it. They're just disgusted. You know, I mean, people just find these people absolutely disgusting. And you can just tell, because it's like, you know, I mean, they look at this. You see a guy, he's like 21-year-old guy, and he's just like, you know, knee deep in this brain poison that they're chucking around. And like, you know, his whole life is in front of him, and who knows what kind of emotional problems he may have or whatever. And I don't mean to sound sympathetic to someone who shoots, whatever, you know, whatever, but, you know, you're not looking so much of the shooter, you're looking at the people who are pumping the brain poison into the void for a profit.
Right.
There are people who are just, you know, I just think the average person, the average working class person, white, black, Latino, whoever, is just sick of this garbage.
I completely agree.
Whether you're, you know, for open borders, you know, anarchist, or whether you want, you know, have some opinions about, like, you know, immigration should be controlled in a particular way, whatever. I mean, Obama was, you know, was the deporter in chief, right? So, you know, plenty of liberals got on board. No matter what what your ideology, I think the overwhelming majority of Americans want to see this type of stuff go away. So there's a lot of pressure, I think, on law enforcement to kind of act that out now. We're going to find out how much these guys really mean it. How much do you mean it? Right. You know, how much do you want this?
The problem with what you said, though, is that the Trump supporters, the Trump voters who want this stuff to go away, there's a very easy way that they can help make it go away, but they're not going to do that. Well,
you know, I think it's very clear that there are not enough Trump supporters to push this guy over the top. I mean, there's just not. Like, it's, you know, Trump supporters are not a majority in the United States. And you can see that, like, you can see that from the degree to, well, he lost the popular vote, A. B, you can see, just in terms of poll numbers and stuff like that, like, you know, when things are down for Trump, they go pretty far down in a way that you can't imagine him winning. When they're up, there's a group of people who are kind of like, yeah, okay. Like, you know what I mean? And there are people who may be amenable to a Republican administration and kind of trying to just block out the fact that he's lobbing all this really incendiary, all these really incendiary remarks around and all that stuff. But I just, you know, Trump, there's a pretty decent chance that he's taken on too much with this. We're going to find out, though. We will find out. The Democrats can lose anything.
Speaking of Trump, though, I think this is quite relevant. Apparently, yeah. Trump actually had retweeted Gebert at some point in 2015.
Yes, he did. Yeah, it's kind of funny, right? Like
that must have made Gebert's life. That must have been the most exciting thing that happened to him at least that year.
Well, he had a bio. Someone sent me a bio because it's like, what's great is like, you know, I reported all this out, and because I couldn't like really leak anything, whatever. I have a very close circle of people that I trust with a story like this, where I can say, hey, this is what I'm working on, and just whatever. But I couldn't like go. I couldn't go to the, you know, I can't go to the public and be like, hey, I got a guy who's a white nationalist, you know, who works in the State Department. It's very difficult for me to go to a wide group of people with that because, you know, can't have it get out in advance. So what happened is I released this investigation. It was all that I was able to pull over within a stretch of time that'd be reasonable for me. Eventually, there's a shit to get off the pot kind of situation where you're building up intelligence and you release a report. It's 6,000 words. You know, it's a lumbering, huge AT-AT from Empire Strikes Back of a report. Like, right. You know, and in doing that, I didn't get everything. And people have been sending me like stuff like archives that he used where there's like in his Twitter bio, he wrote like retweeted or like whatever by President Trump or something in it. Like, you know, there's something like that.
Right.
I don't remember exactly what it was. So he was really proud of it. He was really stoked by it. And it's not the only person who is connected to white nationalism who has been retweeted by Trump.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not by far not. Yeah.
He was like, did he retweet somebody who's like White Genocide Inc. or something?
Right. So he was using at the time when Trump retweeted him, he was using the Twitter username. What was that?
Just for legal purposes, I actually don't know what the white genocide. Somebody else can tell me what it was. I can't remember. But like during the campaign, he did retweet somebody that had like white genocide in their name.
Yes, he did.
Okay, all
right. You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
So the Twitter name Gebert was using at the time when Trump retweeted him is Q1776. And
yes.
His middle name is also Q. Now, I'm about to get conspiratorial here. I think I'm onto something. So we got a guy who is working within the State Department, working within the deep state, if you will, who is going by Q.
Yes, now, I see where you're going here.
Now, can this be? Could Matthew Q. Gebert? By the way, I would like to also add the addendum that way too many of these white nationalists have the name Matthew, and I'm not liking it. Not liking it one bit.
I have a problem with Mets fans that apparently Gebert was a Mets fan growing up.
There you go.
It's like, come on, bro.
That's not too surprising.
You don't want to. You know, get out.
So, anyway. So what are the – oh, my God, my voice just went.
What are the odds that he's queuing on? I'll help you.
Thank you. What are the odds that Gebert is Q?
If he – you know, if he were QAnon, and I'm going to personally give you my view so I don't get any kind of weird troubles, my view is absolutely not, because QAnon, okay, so I'm not deep into the QAnon stuff. You need Will Sommer and, like, you know, Jared Holt to kind of break that stuff down as much. I think, it's a kind of, you know, it erodes, like, my brain cells in a way that I just can't even give it looking directly into the sun. But like QAnon it's not like super racist, is it? Is it like, it's more just about like Trump knowing everything, right?
Right. But I mean, clearly they don't have a problem with the white nationalists. The whole Q thing is basically,
They want to keep the coalition together.
Right. The whole thing is basically Trump is secretly working with, members of the deep state to take down this whole big pedophile global pedophile ring that implicates other members of the deep state and celebrities and world leaders, and basically everyone that's out to get Trump has some sort of connection to this global pedophile ring, and they're trying to stop him. Now,
doing it Mar-a-Lago again? I'm not like super up on it. I can't remember, but seemed like something. I don't know.
Right.
Anyway,
and you know, they even believe that Mueller. There's people who don't believe Mueller was part of it, but the main group of Q people believe that Mueller is actually in cahoots with Trump, and this is all a big show for them to really knock down this pedophile ring. And obviously, Jeff Epstein is part of this. I've seen people bring up that the singer Chester from Linkin Park was snuffed out because he was trying to take down the global pedophile ring. And also, he may have also been John Podesta's illegitimate son, because they look alike, apparently. And JFK Jr. is still alive and secretly a Trump supporter. Yeah.
Yeah. So my theory about that would be that Gabbert wouldn't have enough time for that, but because he was already doing this. But if he was doing that, then the State Department should just fire him for being a completely delinquent at his job. Like, I mean, I'm paying my tax dollars for somebody who is posting his Coach Finn stock and being QAnon. I mean, that is like, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I would have a hard time believing that personally, based upon looking at what he was writing.
Do we know what his middle name Q stands for? What the full
Quinn.
Quinn. Quinn. Oh, okay. Okay.
Quinn.
Okay. Got it. All right. So it's not, I thought it'd be a little bit conspicuous if it was just Q and no one knew what this Q.
Yeah. No, he would like, I've had a lot of people just message me or be like, hey, great work on this. Like, do you notice anything weird about him being Q, Matthew Q? Anyway. I think, you know, innocent until proven guilty as far as being QAnon is concerned there. I would, if he was doing it, then this guy needs to log off. Now, I have a theory about QAnon, and these type of things, whatever, and Pizzagate and all that stuff. I think that, you know, kind of the plebs or whatever you want to call it, the common folk or whatever, have an idea that certain things are going on, and they lack the language to be able to articulate it and the knowledge. And it is 100% true that there are, you know, powerful pedophiles. And we are, you know, there's just, after the Epstein thing, does anybody doubt it? But I think we all kind of suspected that there is some truth to this stuff, right? You know, and they just, you know, people are in pain. They're confused, right?
Right.
You know, there's something going on and they don't know what it is. And, like that Bob Dylan song, and, but they feel something is really fucked up. And these conspiracy theories like take hold and get deeper and deeper and deeper into it. They get deeper and deeper into it because of this feeling of powerlessness in being able to articulate it. And, you know, I think in many ways elites are, you know, welcome these conspiracy theories until they become, inconvenient for them and like become a bad thing. Whereas like people like, you know, Trump, who is most certainly an elite, unlike his followers, you know, the way they portray him, it's sad in some ways because they're not wrong. Like there are powerful pedophiles and people getting away with literal and figurative murder. And because people can't see it or touch it in their daily lives, and they can't articulate it, they latch deeper on these conspiracy theories. I think white nationalists also, like, you know, like with Zog and stuff like that, like, which is, for people who don't know, it's Zionist occupational government. And a lot of these people believe that Jews are like behind the scenes manipulating everything and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, well, there is actually a very substantial criticism to make about American foreign policy and like what is happening, you know, in the Middle East and stuff like that. And, you know, it's sad to see people latch onto like this pure scapegoating of Jews rather than actually like analyzing the way, you know, power manifests in the Middle East and, in the United States, the way empire is kind of going around. And instead they latch onto this completely laughable and fatuous way of seeing. It's sad in some ways, I think. It's just like a lot of people are powerless and then they're, you know, they don't know, they don't have the language to speak.
Right. Yeah, if I didn't bring up the Q thing to take us out here, I don't know what I would have done. I needed something to sort of leave us on a, you know, fun note, I guess. Speculating whether this guy was Q or not, you know?
It is a fun note. It is a fun note. I didn't mean to be a downer by just talking about like conspiracy theories and stuff like that.
No, I'm glad. You know, someone, you know, I bring up whether this guy is Q, and you give us a really good yet very serious speech, but I'll take it. It was
I was in a different state of mind on Saturday night when I was thinking of it, so I was not necessarily as clear and sober as I am now. And that's when it came to me, that just that they were like, because it was right after, it was Saturday, it was right after the Epstein news.
Right.
And I was
pouring one out for your hero, Jeff Epstein.
I was on Saturday.
It was really sad and depressed. Listen, that's gonna fuel conspiracy theories for the next.
Funny, like lizard teeth in his grin, that dude, like Epstein.
Right. Well,
I'm ready to go into the lizard people, but he's like, ugh. Like it's like, you know.
I wasn't ready to do a show on Epstein. I was gonna let the case play out a little bit more, but. Being that the case will not be playing out.
I don't know anything about, I'm here for the entertainment. I'm interested in other people telling me stuff about Epstein because I'm into my own shit. So, like, when, dude, I just like, just give it to me. When people are like, I don't even know if it's real. Be like, he had a boat. It was owned by Mossad. And I'm like, okay. Just tell me. Like, I don't even care if it's real or not. Just tell me. I want to hear it because it's such a weird story, obviously. And,
oh, I'm right there on board. Did you see to take us out here on this this crazy note, I guess. Did you see the Daily Mail story today? Now, yes, I know Daily Mail is not the most legitimate of sources, but apparently, and they have pictures of it, Jeff Epstein in his Manhattan mansion had a painting of Bill Clinton in the Oval Office wearing a dress. Very weird. Very weird. Very weird.
Is that a real thing?
That is a real thing, and they have picture of the painting, by the way. Very weird. Very weird. I'm going to need to bring on some Epstein. I'm going to need to – and apparently, according to the report, according to their source
– are they going to bring him out at the DNC just for it to make me laugh? No, I bring him out. Bring out the Clintons. It's going to be so funny just to see that.
They need to pretend he doesn't exist for at least till we know for sure what is going on here.
Are they
going to
bring out Hillary? In your opinion, yes or no?
I think they won't. They'll bring her out. Yes, I do think so.
Dude. Epstein said, I don't know how you can bring the Clintons out there, man. Just let's say it's Elizabeth Warren, somebody like that. I mean, do you really want her on stage with the Clintons? Like, I would not want to do that. I don't want to give Trump that like power again to get back into like the conspiracy theories.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying completely. I don't know. They need to, I think the Epstein stuff, I need to get an Epstein head on this show to really break it down, because it's also something where I've just been, like I said, just following very, you know, not really too into it yet, because I was waiting for the whole thing to sort of play out. But I think we need to at least see what's going on here, because I think we're about to see some big names. Oh, maybe we won't. Maybe we'll just never see anyone actually go down for this, and it'll just always be that haze of question around everybody, you know?
That's what feeds the conspiracy theories. That's exactly that. It's protecting rich people.
And then there was the story that also came out today where his the woman who was running his ring and providing him with the girls, who no one has seen in 3 years, is living in her tech CEO boyfriend's Massachusetts mansion or something like that, and he's denying it, and just this whole weird, crazy thing that I'm going to have to go more in-depth to on another show. But folks, please.
You know, this is something. I got a white nationalist organizing, you know, and in the State Department with a security clearance. And it's all, I can't compete with the Epstein story because it's I can't, in terms of weirdness, I can't keep up with, you know, it's too.
Yeah, well, you never know where either story is going to go. So let's see, right? I mean,
later. Tomorrow, new story tomorrow.
Where can people check out the previous two stories and the new one tomorrow, which you broke breaking news on the show? Family member.
SPLC, Hey Watch, yes. Family member is going to be on record. And my handle on Twitter is at Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, E Hayden, H-A-Y-D-E-N, at Michael E. Hayden. That's me. You can find the stories there. It's easier. You can go to the Hate Watch site. I mean, do that, check out our other work and things like that. But that's me. And I will provide you with more information when I have it. And I have a bigger story coming out in late September.
Ooh.
But I can't tell you anything about that.
All right,
but I think it's bigger than this. But like, if it's not, forgive me when it comes out. Just be like, oh, whatever. You can say whatever. I think it's bigger. Other people think it's bigger. I am working on it now. I need time. I have a lot of, there's a very large, a substantial amount of material I'm reading through that was handed to me.
I believe you just pre-announced your next appearance on this show in approximately 1 month.
Well, we'll do it. Let's do it. Like, the air will be a little bit crisper. Let's do it in like full on. You know, football season. Go Jets, and we'll talk again then.
All right, sounds good. I'll put it in my calendar, and we will definitely do it. Michael Hayden of Hate Watch.
Yes.
Thank you so much. It is always a pleasure. It was great seeing you this past week in person, and we should get lunch sometime.
Yeah, we will. You know, when I'm nearby, we will.
Let's do it. All right, man. Take care.
Okay, take it easy, man.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bloop. All right, ladies and gentlemen, what an episode! What an episode! Excuse me, I had a weird stutter there for a second. Let's take that. Let's take that weird stutter I have and let's bring it to the Patreon page at patreon.com/mattbinder, where you can help support this show. You can help the show grow. You can help the show just maintain. If we don't grow it anymore, except for maybe just you joining us. But basically, I ask for no more than $5 a month, but you can give less and you can give more. Patreon.com/mattbinder, once again. And really, the show is not possible without Patreon subscribers. Yes, this first half is free, but even this first half wouldn't be possible without Patreon subscribers. This show takes time. It takes money to upgrade and buy stuff when I need it. Just to even pay for podcast hosting at the very least, it costs money. And just by giving me some cash, you're able to make me want to do this show. And these are the people who are patrons and make me want to do this show. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Ari R, Benji, Bobby M, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, Dave Z, Dragon Slayer, Floaties, Froz K, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian, Curtis J, Jameson T, Jameson Test, that's a username, so I'll say it in full. Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Joseph R, Katie S, Katz, Koshal, We got a new guy or gal there. Kyle, Lisa D, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namdenet, Romina O, Ryan Left Is Best, Scott R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Will P, Utopian, and Zarin. You can also, if you can't help this show financially, which I totally get if you really cannot, please do not if you can't afford to. But you can support the show without spending a dime by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/MattBinder. And it just come to my attention that the sound may be a little bit down since we got the Skype, because it's weird like that. So let me put it up now. YouTube.com/MattBinder to subscribe to the YouTube channel and help grow the YouTube channel. Also, go to doomedpod.com for the podcast version of the show. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and also leave a review, a star review, a written review. It helps let people know about the show. And on top of all that, one of the most important things you could do, no matter what, is just tell people about Doomed with Matt Binder. Tell them about the show. Let them know how much you like it. Let them know how much you hate it. Maybe it'll pique their interest that way. I don't care. I just want them to listen. Follow me on Twitter, @MattBinder. Follow me on Instagram, @MattBinder. Follow me on, like my Facebook page, which I should try to promote more. Just go to Facebook search and type in Matt Binder. That's the show for today. See you next time. We'll go into the second half of the show. Well, I'll take your... read your live stream comments, take your questions, and we'll talk a little bit more. But for everyone else, see you all next time on Doomed.